Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, January 24th, 2020. And I don't know about you, we saw plenty of fog this morning coming in, but in Pantograph land, there's rain and snow predicted with a high of 37 and a low of 29. And inside, we see that Stories to Tell is the front page article. And we have Nancy Wilkie, a picture of a lovely lady in a lovely yellow cardigan, and she's talking to her husband, Don. She tells her husband, Don, a story during a Chautauqua storytelling workshop on Thursday at Luther Oaks Retirement Community in Bloomington. The event was led by noted author John Walsh in the background at the right of this photo. We have a number of people sitting around a nice dining table, and they're talking in pairs. And it says, Stories to Tell, Sharing Life's Experience, One Facet of Chautauqua. Don Wilkie enjoyed when his grandfather came over for Sunday dinner because they played games together. I was the center of attention to him, Wilkie recalled. But one Sunday afternoon, when Wilkie was 5 and a half, no one, including his grandfather, was paying attention to him. Instead, they were listening to the radio. It was very quiet, Wilkie recalled. Everyone was very serious. What did it mean to be bombed? I wanted to be reassured, but I wasn't. December 7, 1941, the day of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, may have been Wilkie's first lesson that he was part of a bigger world. His most recent lesson may have been Thursday afternoon when he shared that story. Wilkie, 83, was among 25 residents of Luther Oaks, the Bloomington retirement community, who participated in an interactive workshop called Storytelling 101. It was led by professional author, speaker, storyteller, and Luther Oaks resident John Walsh. The workshop was part of a Luther Oaks first Chautauqua Week of programs. And we'll continue on page 2 to discuss this. It says morning devotions. The program includes morning devotions, historical programs, entertainment, and discussions of current events, including gun violence and immigration. Chautauqua was a popular adult education and social movement in the United States in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Luther Oaks decided to host a Chautauqua for its residents in January when it's difficult for some residents to get out, said Life Enrichment Coordinator Colleen Steinberg. When you fulfill an intellectual, social, and spiritual needs of people, then you fill their emotional needs, Steinberg said. Storytelling was one topic selected. You get to know each other that way, Steinberg said, and you get insight into each other and the person you are. And it's just fun. Everybody is a storyteller, Walsh told the participants on Thursday. It's the way we communicate with each other. Walsh's job was to give residents suggestions on how to tweak their stories. He suggested possible topics, and then residents split into small table groups and told each other their stories, then listened as their partners asked for more details of certain parts of the story. As residents refined their stories, Walsh offered suggestions such as adding emotion, describing not just what they saw and heard, what they touched, smelled, and tasted, mentioning what else was going on in the world when the story happened, and describing who else was involved. Is there a better place to begin the story? Walsh asked. Sometimes the story doesn't start at the beginning. It starts at an interesting place. Is there a better place to end the story? A common mistake of storytelling is the story ends when you keep talking. Gradually, Wilkie's stories became more than Sunday afternoons with his grandfather. The story of Marilyn Myers, 83, evolved from her grandfather consoling her after a Sunday school teacher called her ignorant at the time she cherished with him and his Bible. The story of Ed Proctor, 87, morphed from boyhood memories in the family barn to when he discovered a snake and never went into that part of the barn again. The story of Nancy Wilkie, 81, was enhanced from describing how she, as a child, fed cats in the barn and how the barn smelled. If you want more on these, there's another photo that's presented, and there is a photo gallery of this. And it's at thepantograph.com. Nancy Wilkie continued to talk about her barn stories when she said it didn't smell the greatest. Four residents wanted to enhance their communication skills, learn something new, and get to know each other better. When we share our stories, we get to know ourselves better, Myers said. It helps us to get in touch with ourselves. It enhances us as individuals. It makes us more open to each other. It's important for all of us to talk with our families and share our stories, Myers continued. And when we tell our stories, Walsh said, we pass our culture to the next generation. As a family and as a nation, we need to pass our stories on to people who are younger, to pass our culture on to them, Walsh said. Stories affect a person's decision-making skills. They teach you what is the right thing to do, what is the improper thing to do. The next generation should get those stories from their parents and grandparents. This story was offered up by Paul Swish, who can be reached at 309-820-3275, or you can tweet him at @PG_Swish, S-W-I-E-C-H. We will go back now to a little more national news, and it's talking about impeachment, the impeachment proceedings. Democrats detail origins of misconduct claim, and this is from the Associated Press. Democratic House prosecutors made an expensive case Thursday at Donald Trump's impeachment trial that he abused power like no other president in history, swept up by, quote, a completely bogus Ukrainian theory pushed by attorney Rudy Giuliani. On Friday, the Democrats all pressed their final day of arguments before the skeptical Republican senators, focusing on the second article of impeachment, obstruction of Congress investigation. As the audience of Senate jurors sat through another long day, the prosecutors outlined how they said Trump abused power for his own personal political benefit ahead of the 2020 election, even as the nation's top FBI and national security officials were publicly warning off the theory that it was Ukraine and not Russia that interfered with the 2016 elections. That's what Donald Trump wanted, investigated, or announced. This completely bogus, Kremlin-pushed conspiracy theory, said Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who is leading the prosecution during the Thursday session. Trump is accused of seeking the Ukraine investigation and probes of political foe Joe Biden and Biden's son, while holding back congressional-approved military aid as leverage. Schiff said, you can imagine what a danger that presents to this country. The president is facing trial in Senate after the House impeached him last month, accusing Trump of abusing his office by asking Ukraine for the investigations while withholding aid from a U.S. ally at war with bordering Russia. The second article of impeachment accuses him of obstructing Congress by refusing to turn over documents or allow officials to testify in the House probe. Republicans, growing tired of the long hours of proceedings, have defended Trump's actions as appropriate and cast the process as a politically motivated effort to weaken him in the midst of his re-election campaign. Republicans hold a 53-47 majority in the Senate, and acquittal is considered likely. No president has ever used his office to compel a foreign nation to help him cheat in our elections. Representative Jerry Nadler of New York, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, told senators. He said the nation's founders would be shocked. The president's conduct was wrong. It is illegal. It is dangerous. Democrats scoffed at Trump's claim he had good reason for pressuring Ukraine to investigate Vice President Biden or any political foe. And then we will return to page one for our final article of this portion. And it's talking about the EPA and something very dear to all of us, clean water. Trump rolls back water rules. Fewer waterways covered. Law called a burden on business. The Trump administration on Thursday ended federal protection for many of the nation's millions of miles of streams, arroyos, and wetlands, sweeping environmental rollback that could leave the waterways more vulnerable to pollution from development, industry, and farms. The policy change, signed by heads of the EPA and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, narrows the types of waterways that qualify for federal protection under this half-century-old Clean Water Act. Since his first weeks of office, Donald Trump has targeted environmental and public health regulations that he says imposed unnecessary burdens on business. Speaking to farmers in Texas, he repeated his frequent charge that past era attempts in 2015 and more clearly Trump repeated his frequent charge that previous era attempts in 2015 to more clearly define what water bodies qualify for federal pollution protection was one of the most ridiculous regulations of all. And it continues on to page two. Where Trump said Thursday, changes to clean water rule have long been sought by builders, oil and gas developers, farmers, and others. But environmental groups and public health advocates say the rollback will allow businesses to dump pollutants into newly federal unprotected waterways and fill in wetlands, threatening public water supplies downstream, harming wildlife habitat. EPA head Andrew Wheeler told reporters Thursday that states were still free to step in with state protection of newly vulnerable waterways if they chose. Our rule protects the environment and our waterways while respecting the rights of states and property owners, Wheeler said. The rollback of the Clean Water Enforcement strikes the proper balance between Washington and the states. Brett Hertel, a government affairs director with the Center for Biological Diversity Conservation Advocacy Group, called the changes a sickening gift to polluters. The administration's action will allow wetlands, streams, and rivers across the vast stretch of America to be obliterated with pollution. Hertel said, contending the rollback would speed extinction of dozens of endangered species. People and wildlife need clean water to thrive. Destroying half of our nation's streams and wetlands will be one of Trump's ugliest legacies. Trump rule narrows the previous administration's 2015 definition of what's a protected body of water and effectively removes safeguards for some waterways that had been put into place with the 1972 Clean Water Act. The administration says the changes will allow farmers to plow their fields without fear of unintentionally straying from the bank off the banks of a federally protected dry creek, bog, or ditch. And that concludes our information from page, first page. And let's take a quick look at our flicked fact for the day. It says on the Discovery Channel these days is a show entitled Man vs. Bear, in which three human competitors go up against grizzly bears in challenges based on the bear's natural instinct and predatory skills, such as tug-of-war, tree climbing, and eating contest. Why might Twin City area folk be watching at 7 p.m. Saturday for the latest episode? Well, here's why. Because 30-year-old Bloomington resident Bradley Salma is listed by Discovery Channel as one of the three competitors against the bear. So what a fun local fact. This is 7 p.m. Saturday on the Discovery Channel, if you're interested in seeing how Mr. Salma fares. Or if the bear wins, we'll see. So, and let's see what's coming up on the next pages. On page A3, we see a picture that may be familiar to you from the news last night. Suspect Clifford Brewer on the left talking with his attorney, Joshua Richards of Chicago, after he pleaded not guilty to six counts of murder while making an appearance in Livingston County Court on Thursday. The title of the article is Man Pleads Not Guilty to Killing Three on Christmas. Wife, son, neighbor found shot in head inside the Cullum house. Here's a picture of Mr. Brewer returning to his cell after pleading not guilty to six counts of murder after making an appearance in the Livingston County Court on Thursday. This is out of Pontiac and written by Kelsey Watzner. And the Cullum man accused of killing his wife, son, and neighbor pleaded not guilty Thursday when he appeared in Livingston County Court for the first time since his arrest on Christmas Day. Clifford Brewer, 53, is charged with six counts of first-degree murder and remains in custody in lieu of posting $500,000. He is accused of shooting his wife, Shirley, 48, his son Christian, 27, and a neighbor friend, Norman Walker, 51, who were all found in the Brewer's home with a single shotgun wound to the head. Livingston County State's Attorney Randy Yadnick said he believes the state has a strong case against Brewer, who would not say if a motive has been determined. The Illinois State Police, the Livingston County Sheriff's Department, did a wonderful job in investigating this case. We're confident in the charges and we're confident in our case, he said after the hearing. We still have some investigation to do. We're awaiting results of forensic analysis, things of that nature, but we're confident in the case. A private defense attorney, Joshua Richards, relieved Brewer's public defender during the hearing. Richards of the Stephen L. Richards Law Office in Chicago declined to comment. Brewer's trial date was set for April 20th. Yadnick said he doesn't anticipate proceeding with the trial that soon, but he can't rule it out. That really is all going to be dependent on the defendant and how they feel and if they are prepared for the trial or not, he said, adding Richards may seek experts to testify in Brewer's defense. Yadnick said the triple homicide is a much larger case than he typically sees in Livingston County, so his office is crossing our T's and dotting our I's. Previously, Yadnick said Brewer called authorities at 2:05 a.m. December 25th, saying that three people were dead inside His home autopsy results indicate all three died from gunshot wounds to the head. None were self-inflicted. At a subsequent hearing, Yadnick said Brewer went birthday shopping for his wife, but the two argued when he returned home on the evening of December 24th. Walker, a mutual friend and neighbor, was invited to the house by Shirley Brewer, and the two drank and played loud music in an upstairs bedroom. According to court documents, Brewer told police he fell asleep and a few hours later discovered their bodies and a gun near her body. Brewer, a corrections officer with the Illinois Department of Corrections at the Pontiac Prison, has been placed on administrative leave. He had an active firearm owner's identification card at the time of the shootings. If he is convicted, Brewer could face life in prison. And that concludes this article, which was presented by Kelsey Watzner. She can be reached at 309-820-3254 or be followed on Twitter at K Watzner, KWATZNAUR, UER. And then we have news from the Chicago area, Chicago Police and Prediction Program. Watchdogs warn of flaws in the formula. The Chicago Police have ended a program that sought to predict people most likely to be victims of or perpetrators of gun crime, according to a watchdog report released Thursday that warned the department of serious flaws in the approach. The police department implemented the method in 2012 using a formula developed by researchers at the Illinois Institute of Technology and backed by a $3.8 million in federal grants. Department spokesman Luis Agostina confirmed Thursday that the department decided to end the program after researchers at the nonprofit RAND Corporation reviewed it last year. The formula created a list of people deemed most likely to commit or be victimized by a shooting. It relied on several factors, including age, during an individual's latest arrest, the number of times someone was the victim of a shooting or battery or assault, and their total number of arrests for unlawful weapons. Early versions of the formula also used gang affiliation, narcotics arrests to calculate risk scores. The report says those criteria were later removed. The higher your score, the more likely you were considered to become a victim or perpetrator of gun violence under the Crime and Victimization Risk Model, previously known as the Strategic Subject List. The police departments across the country have been criticized for similar programs aiming to predict where crime will occur and who is likely to commit it, particularly by civil rights advocates who fear the, quote, predictive policing strategies will prompt unwarranted police attention on minority neighborhoods. And then our final article on page A3 is to learn that the Board of Elections finds that fewer people voted in error. Only 15 people who self-identified as not being U.S. citizens cast ballots in 2018 and 2019 elections, the Illinois State Board of Elections said in a correction Thursday. Of these, three of which actually turned out to be citizens. Spokesperson Matt Dietrich had initially reported that 16 possible non-citizens had voted. In a clarification Thursday, he said one of the voters had voted in two different elections and was inadvertently counted as two voters. Those people were able to vote due to recently discovered programming errors in the Illinois automatic voter registration system that automatically signs people up to vote when they apply for or renew their driver's license. Official in Secretary of State Jesse White's office, which manages driver's licenses, have accepted responsibility for the error and say the problem was immediately fixed. That system the result of a 2017 legislation that passed both chambers of the General Assembly by unanimous bipartisan vote, launched July 2, 2018. So they're being very vigilant. And then we note, sadly, on our last part here, that a lady died after a crash on West Market. A Bloomington woman died in a single vehicle crash late Tuesday on the city's west side. About 10:50 p.m., a vehicle went off the road on West Market Street just west of Brock Drive and crashed into a ditch, according to Bloomington police. Kelly Roseberry was seriously injured in the crash and taken to Advocate Bromine in Normal, where she was pronounced dead at 11:30 p.m. in the emergency department. A man who was the sole passenger was not injured in the crash, and according to the news release from the Bloomington Police Department, officers attempted life-saving measures before fire and rescue and ambulance arrived at the scene. Preliminary autopsy results indicate cervical spinal injuries that occurred during the crash. Roseberry's death caused Rosemary's death. McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder said toxicology results are pending. Well, in our last couple of minutes here, let's take a look at today in history. And we find that today is Friday, January 24th, 24th day of 2020. Oh, my goodness. Was on this day, January 24th of 1943, that President Franklin D. Roosevelt and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill concluded a wartime conference in Casablanca, Morocco. In 1848, John W. Marshall discovered a gold nugget at Sutter's Mill in North California, a discovery that started the gold rush of 1849. In 1935, beer first sold in cans in Richmond, Virginia, by the Gottfried Kruger Brewing Company in Austria. And let's see what else we have. Around the area, in 1920, an unnamed illness called an epidemic in the press is spreading through the Alton shops on the west side. 18 men were absent from work in the boiler shop yesterday. Most attacks have been mild, and the outbreak is expected to subside soon. And that's an interesting contrast. Today, we have a couple of cities in China that are shut down and carefully being monitored, epidemics of the flu here in the United States in 2020. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for Friday, January 24th, 2020. So please stay tuned.